G'day Knights fans, Scott Durer here, sitting down with Our Town, Our Team podcast, and we're going to talk about my career.
All right, back again for another edition of the podcast, and you heard it at the top of the show, Scott Durer, former halfback. Knights great. Can I call you Knights great? Does that sit all right with you?
Debatable. Probably not. Great. Maybe you're talking to my mum, maybe, but other than that, maybe not.
Great to have you with us nonetheless, and still involved with the club. I think that we'll definitely go back into the career and how it all played out. But if we can start off with the role that you currently have involved with the Knights, is it the Director of Elite Pathways, or what exactly is the formal title?
So I'm Elite Pathways Development Coach.
I was close.
Is my title. So basically my role is to make sure that our best young players get the right coaching and education, to try and get as many Knights local juniors through from our juniors into our first grade system. So basically, trying to help all the guys from our under-20s down to our under-14 program, trying to make them as good a footy players as we can. And the program's also pretty holistic, where we look at their schooling and work life and home life and try and educate them as young men. As much as we want them to be good footy players, we're realistically know that they're not all going to be NRL players. So we try and give them some life skills along the way to make them better people as well.
At what point did coaching of sorts sort of was the seed planted in your mind that you thought this might be a good career post-football?
Pretty young, to be honest with you. I spoke, when I was playing here, I spoke a lot to Brian Smith about some coaching, and just I was really always interested with coaching and that sort of stuff. And then when I went overseas and played towards the back end of my career over there, I really enjoyed helping the younger guys at the Catalans, where I was playing overseas, and really enjoyed trying to educate them a little bit more about the game, and really enjoyed seeing those guys have success. So when it became time for me to hang up the boots, I was really interested and wanted to get into coaching. I love the game and love being able to help, and managed to get an opportunity here at the Knights.
Without getting too specific, you know, Knights fans obviously always have one eye on the next generation who's coming through. So you probably the best person to speak to about the talent coming through the junior ranks. Who are some of the players that we should be keeping an eye out for?
Look, we got some, there's always some really, really good young talent at the Knights. We had five guys in the New South Wales under 18s Origin this year, which is the most out of any other club, which is outstanding. I think Phoenix Crossland was a halfback in that game, played with Bradman Best, 17, you know, I was a year young playing in the Origin, and Jaron Purcell as well, that's only 17, played in that Origin game. So, you know, without going into too much detail, there's some real quality kids that we've got at our club, both as people and as players.
And with your role, do you get out there on the field with them, and you're working with the halves and tipping them up on different things that you're looking at? Like how hands-on are you in your position?
Yeah, so I head coached our 18s as well this year, as overseeing our junior sort of pathway, I'm pretty hands-on, especially, like you said, with the young halves and the spine, so hookers, fullbacks as well. They're such an important part of the game now, and I think it's an area that we've identified at our club that we could do better with our coaching as well. So it's a really important job, I think, at the moment, to get that right, so that in 4 or 5 years' time, when these guys are hopefully ready to play first grade, they're well and truly on track, and they understand, you know, the game a lot more in depth than maybe what some players do at the moment.
So you're a half for those listeners. I'm hoping that we have a bit of a younger audience who may not have seen you play. So you're a half, came through the grades. Take me back to the start of how you were scouted. Your Tari boy moved to Port Macquarie, and then talk me through the journey to getting into the Knights system.
Yeah, so I was, as you said, born in Tari, then moved to Port Macquarie. Got sort of spotted playing through the school programs, and made a few rep teams when I was younger, the group sort of group three, and then sort of schoolboy stuff. And then when I was 16, signed a contract with the Knights to come down and play under 18s. So moved to Newcastle when I was 16, turning 17, started in the SG ball, and played a few years SG ball, worked my under 20s, reserve grade, and eventually into first grade. So it was... I love coming through the Knights junior system, we always had strong teams, was lucky enough to win an under-18s competition, SG Ball competition on the way through, and had a lot of fun along the way doing it.
What about some of the names of the players that you'd come through the system with? I'm sure there's a few standouts.
Yeah, there's some. Got to play with some really talented players, obviously, in our age group. Just from that team that won the SJ Ball competition, we had quite a few guys going to play first grade. Jared Mullen, Luke Walsh, Corey Patterson, Ben Farrar, Terence Cuciu, Cade Snowden, all came through. Aku Uwate was on the wing. We had quite a talented team, and we got rewarded winning an under-18s comp. We lost an under-20s grand final 2 years later as well to Penrith, which a lot of those guys, James McManus, had joined us by then, and you know, we had quite a talented core group of players that stuck together through my junior years.
What was the spine set up? Because Luke Walsh, Jared Mullen, yourself, all halves and quite dominant ball players as well. So how did that work in a young team?
It was quite fun, actually. We sort of rotated through under-18s. Mullo played a bit of fullback as well.
No way.
So he played a bit of fullback with Walshy and myself in the halves, and then I played a little bit of hooker as well, and Walshy and Mullo in the halves, and then the year we won the comp, actually, I was on the bench. Mullo and Walshy started in the halves, and then I came on after 20 minutes or so and played the rest of the game in the halves. I think Walshy might have went to hooker. And
right.
So we sort of rotated around, and then the year when we made the 20s grand final, Mullo was already playing first grade
right
by then. So Mullo was in first grade while she played halfback, and I played 5'8" in our under-20s year that we were beaten in the grand final by Penrith. So it was, to be honest with you, it was really, really good to have a couple of close mates that we were also competing for spots in the team. So it drove us to be better players, because we knew that three couldn't fit into two, so to speak. So
yeah,
it drove us to compete harder for spots.
When you've got that intense competition and it is coming from your good mates, would you be, you know, doing extras together, or would you go off on your own and do your own thing, trying to get the edge? Like how would that dynamic work at training?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So we did I think I was the first one to get my license, so I was driving around carpooling the boys. We used to go to training early and kicking was our, you know, we did heaps of it through our juniors, and we created our own little games and kicking competitions, and you know, having 40-20 comps, and we just loved being out on the field playing footy. So Mullo and I went the same school, went through St Francis Xavier together, so it was, you know, we'd go straight from school and jump in the car and go straight up to training and just be there an hour before anyone else and kick, and you know, it was awesome to have other people that, like I said, were close mates, being in the same situation, and we were driving each other to be better all the time.
And while you're in that system, obviously some legendary players are part of that Knights team over the years. Who were some of the guys that you were looking up to, and did anybody take you under their wing, so to speak?
Joey in the initial stages, sort of coming out of sort of when we're in the 20s age group, sort of that was 05-06, Joey was sort of back end of his career, so Joey had a pretty big influence on us, especially through preseason. We did some first grade preseasons, and Joey was really good, just with his footy IQ and understanding of the game was... he was on another level, which sometimes was hard because we didn't understand what he was talking about. And then once I sort of back end of my 20s and step into first grade, Danny Baderas, who was he's from Taree obviously as well, so we family friends for a long time. Bed sort of took me under his wing, and really he was the one that really showed me what it took to be a first grade player, how professional you needed to be off field, and then how that could transfer from the things away from the footy field and then into training and then into a game. He was the one that really, really probably made me go to the next level, and was fortunate enough to play a year with him before he went overseas to Leeds.
Talk to me about the Joey Johns conversations and when he's saying things that are sort of floating over the top of the head. Would you probe a bit deeper, or you're too sort of shy to say, oh, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about? Like, I'd imagine, because he had an aura about him, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. He's intimidating.
Yeah.
Joey's an intimidating guy. You know, he was intense. He trained. He trained just about probably as hard as anyone I'd seen. At first he was intimidating, and then once you actually got to know him a little bit, it was, you know, you could have a joke with him, and
yeah,
he'd actually have a bit of a, not a bit of a laugh, but we'd have a bit of fun if we didn't understand. And I think he knew sometimes and we didn't understand by the
right.
sort of inquisitive look on our faces, like, when we don't really get this, Joe, what's sort of happening. But he was really good at explaining to us, putting it simply, sort of what he wanted us to do. And then as we sort of got a bit older and learn a bit more, it was, you know, we'd go to him with sort of problems, I suppose, and Joey was pretty good at figuring out solutions, how to sort out little issues in our game.
Yeah, right. So I guess it doesn't surprise you that he's, since hanging up the boots, transitioned into that specialty coaching role. I suppose that was just a fait accompli. It was always going to happen.
Yeah, I think everyone saw how good he was as a player, and that he was on another level to most people playing in his era. And I think he's figured out the right formula to be able to teach people now.
Yeah.
I think he does still find it hard because there's not many out there that are on his level. So I think he finds it hard, bringing it back so that people do understand him.
Yeah.
But he is, obviously, his footy IQ, which I talk about a lot with our younger guys, understanding of the game he's the best I've ever seen. He's the best player I've seen, and being able to manipulate the other team and his teammates to do what he wanted was I don't know how to describe it. It's just next level. Yeah, it's better than anyone else I've ever seen.
It's better than Lego.
It's better than Lego. Yeah.
So do you take a lot of his teachings in the time that you spent with him, and then implement that into your teachings now that you're passing on to, you know, generation next?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do some of the drills that we used to do with Joey for our halves and for our kickers, and that I'm still doing now with some of our young halves. And I know Joey's involved with the Origin pathways as well, so he helps out with our 18s and 16s Origin boys that go down, and I speak to them constantly about what they learn off him and what are the things that he's teaching you. Is it different to what I'm doing? And they say it's the same stuff. He keeps saying what you said last week's what he said when I went down there, which is good for me to know that.
Well, that's reassuring.
That I'm on the right track, and it's good for the boys, I think, to hear it as well, that, you know, Joey's saying a similar thing to what I'm saying now, and I'm certainly not taking the credit for what I'm doing. It's, you know, it was what Joey taught us, and I think a lot of the stuff that he did with us is still relevant in today's game. So pick and choose the best bits out of it and try and pass that down to our best talented halves.
So you see Jared Mullen get the call up. He's playing first grade alongside Andrew Johns. You've graduated from the 20s. At what point did you think that first grade was attainable, that, you know, you could genuinely do this and make it happen?
Probably when Joey retired. Joey retired in 07 and I got my debut at the end of 07.
Yeah.
So through that sort of end of 06 going into 07 pre-season, I did a fair bit of work with the NRL guys, and obviously Joey was getting towards the back end of his career, and Luke Walsh got the jump at the start of 07, and he got the gig once Joey sort of pulled up after round two or three, whatever it was.
Yep.
So I was sort of questioning myself and whether the Knights was the right place for me, and because Walshy had got the first crack and did a really good job, and him and Mullo were there in the halves. So I was sort of played a fair bit of reserve grade in 07, and then end up getting my debut in the back end of 07, and probably halfway through 07 when I made a decision that I really needed to make some better life choices off the field, to try and give myself the best opportunity, whether that was going to be at the Knights or another club. End up, as I said, got my debut end of 07, really trained hard off season between 07 and 08, and round one, 2008, I was a starting half. So, it was probably once Joey had, you know, sounds funny, once he did retire, it was like, okay, there's
a chance,
a couple of us here that are going to take that jersey. Is it going to be me or is it going to be someone else? So I wanted it to be me, and lucky enough, I got it. I got a few games and had a bit of a crack at it.
So Brian Smith was coaching at the time. When Luke Walsh got the jump on you, what were those conversations that you had with Smithy, or did you not speak to him about it, and you just had the conversation within yourself that I would, you know, clean up my act and really chase this?
No, we spoke. Smithy was a bit different, but we spoke quite often, and actually went around to his house one time. He invited me around to his house and we sat down and had a couple of beers actually, and had a pretty frank conversation about where I was heading and what I needed to do to take that next step to be a regular first grader and not just a you know, someone that was a maybe and a good junior and could potentially play. So
what
that
were those
was
things
sort of,
that he wanted you to
oh,
work
it was,
on?
It was more the off-field stuff and the you know, how that could convert into being sort of fitter and stronger. And, you know, I didn't sort of – I trained hard, but I didn't realise that the preparing to train and the way you eat and the sleep and
yep.
your lifestyle away actually affected your ability to train harder for longer. And if that makes sense, that I needed to eat better, yep. to sleep better, have a better lifestyle, and that was going to help me train better. And then obviously you train better, you're going to play better. So until I realised that – you know, well, and that's probably why Walshy got the jump on me. He was playing better footy than me at the time because he was probably doing all those other little one percenters better than what I was. And then, you know, once I'd had that realisation that I needed to make some changes sort of back end of 07 or halfway through 07, then, you know, I was able to get myself into a position where I was the starting halfback at the club at the start of 08.
So we're at the back end of 07. Talk me through the conversation that you're going to debut. Brian tell you beforehand, or did you see the team sheet? Because each person's debut story is so yeah. different.
No, it was Rick Stone, actually. Rick Stone was assistant coach at the time. He rang me. I was living with Jared Mullen. We were living together in town in Newcastle here, and got a phone call from Stoney, and just said, he said, how you feeling? How's the body? Etc. So I feel great, you know.
Was this said, normal, like Stoney nah, would check in, or you thought something was a little bit?
I thought something was up. It wasn't normal for Stoney to ring me. I had a really good relationship with Trent Robinson, who was the reserve grade coach at the time.
Yep.
So normally Robbo would ring me and we'd speak about footy and different things. But
yep.
so for Stoney to ring, I thought, you know, something was going on. And this was back end of the week, Thursday, I think. We had a Friday night game Thursday, early Thursday morning. He said, we need you to come to training this afternoon. There's a 1 o'clock training session or something with first grade. I said, oh, great. He said, what's happening? He said, mate, while she's crook, he'd been ill, and we want you to come, and there's a chance you're going to play. They needed to get special dispensation from the NRL for me to play because we'd used so many players or whatever for the year, so they had to get permission for me to play from the salary cap. Obviously, you get bonuses for playing first grade, et cetera, yep. et cetera, so they needed permission from the NRL. But Stoney said, you know, Smithy was in talks to try and make that happen. So I went from, you know, potentially playing reserve grade on a Sunday, I think they were playing, to, you know, Thursday morning being in line for a first grade debut on the Friday night against Manly at the Central Coast. So went to training while she was crook, and Smithy said, you're in. We just got permission come through at midday, so you're playing.
So before the training session, you knew that you were in?
Yeah, I knew just probably about an hour before training. Smithy then called me. I think I was just about to leave home to go to training. He said, mate, we've got permission when we get there. If Walshy's no good, you'll be playing. So I said, sweet, I'll be ready if that's the case. And
yeah.
once we got to training, and obviously they were doing a bit of a check on Walshy to see how he was feeling, and he was still pretty crook, so Smithy made the decision there. He said, all right, Walshy, have a spell, and gave me an opportunity.
How'd you train that session?
Pretty average, to be
really?
Fair. I was pretty nervous. pretty nervous. And there was a little bit of stuff going on behind the scenes at the club that week.
Yep.
Kirk Reynoldson, bit of drama was going on with Reno at that time.
That,
and
yes.
there was some off-field issues sort of happening at the club at the time. So it was, to be fair, it was a little bit of a whirlwind, and it was... The week had been a bit sort of strange anyway because of the Reno thing that was happening. And then, it was didn't train great. And then the next day we played Manly on a Friday night at the Coast and got beat by 50. So it was probably the week that we'd had as a club probably coincided with a pretty poor performance.
So the talk was if Kirk Reynoldson played an extra game, he would trigger an additional year in his contract, and the club weren't playing him. So that was dominating the headlines. Did your news of a debut leak through the press, or was that kept pretty quiet?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I couldn't tell you, to be fair. I wasn't really... My head was spinning, to be honest. It was sort of with the Renault stuff, and I knew I'd liked Renault. He's a really good guy and still is a really good fella. And, it was sort of a little bit of a... you know, disappointing sort of week, so to speak, with what was happening with Kirk. And then for me to get the debut, it was obviously very exciting. And between me finding out, telling family no, organising tickets for family to go and watch, and trying to prepare, you know, 24 hours for a game, I don't really know if it broke in the media too much, to be fair to you. And it didn't affect me if it did or it didn't. I wasn't really worried about that. I was just worried about you know, going after play and tackling Steve Menzies and Anthony Watmo, and Manly were on fire at the time. I think they were grand finalists in that year, so they were flying, and they showed me what it was like to play in first grade, that's for sure.
Aside from the scoreline, was there a moment or an incident that sticks out in the debut?
Yep. So when Brian Smith sitting down in the sheds before the game saying, they're going to come at you. You're obviously a small half. Watmo's on your edge. They're obviously going to target you. He said, first time Watmo gets the ball, I want you to sprint up offline as hard as you can and just give him everything you got.
Yeah.
I thought, yep, no worries. That's what you want me to do. That's what I'm going to do. And I remember it happening. They came down a short side and I screamed up, give Watmo everything I had, and end up flat on my back and him running downfield about 30 metres, I think. So it was like, okay, this is another level. Picked myself up, got back in the line, and sort of thought, okay, righto, this is what first
Welcome
grade
to
is.
First grade.
Yeah, let's get on with it. So was fun. That was, you know, as much as it was, we lost 50-16, I think it was. It was not a great game and day, obviously, for the club, but for me, that's my debut. And I still think it was pretty special, and ended up kicking a couple of goals, a couple of try assists. So it was, as much as we got hammered, it was still a pretty, obviously, a memorable occasion.
So then moving forward to the following season, as you mentioned, you started the year, obviously trained the house down in the preseason, made those adjustments to the diet and whatnot. I think it's fair to say that 2008 was your most successful year in first grade. Talk me through that period, you know, starting in the halves, consistency, you know, playing first grade. Did you feel like you'd arrived and you were getting more comfortable as the season went on?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was, I think definitely my best year in the NRL. But yeah, I think the preseason had a lot to do with that. Obviously spoke about making those decisions to live better and train better. And once that, you know, Smithy had told me before round one, he said, you're it, you're the half that we're going to give you a shot. You know, if it takes you 4 or 6 weeks, that's okay. So I just went on and, trained like I was as the number seven. You know, I really tried to take control of the team, and I think the players appreciated that. And Danny Bedaris was the hooker at the time. So Bedsy, you know, he put his faith in me and said, you know, this is your team now, and grab it and run with it, which was really good. And, I really enjoyed that year, and we had a pretty successful year. I think we had to beat Brisbane in Brisbane in the last round to make the semis, and they beat us. I think it was, you know, maybe 20-2 or something like that. I think it wasn't that close, but we'd had for the team that we had and the amount of changes and young guys that we had, I think, you know, we probably saw that as a pretty good stepping stone, a successful year for us, even though we didn't quite make it into the top eight.
And then the following year, what do you remember about 2009?
I remember they brought in Ben Rogers for 2009, and Benny, he got the jump on me for round one. So they played him in round one with Mullo in the halves, and that was Smithy's reasoning was that they'd signed him to come and play first grade, and even though that I'd had a great preseason, they were going to give Benny a shot in round one, and we lost to the Gold Coast in round one, and I came in round two. So they dropped Benny, so they give him a shot for a week, which was a bit harsh on him probably, and I came in round two, got me out of the match, and we beat Cronulla at Cronulla in round two. So I went on a bit of a streak and played a fair few games in a row in 2009 after that, and then got hit with a couple of injuries and was sort of a bit up and down for the rest of the year. My body didn't quite cooperate, and my form suffered because of that.
Before we get into the injuries, when a club does bring somebody in, so Ben Rogers, are they talking to you about these decisions beforehand, or are the playing group talking amongst each other that, you know, we've signed this guy, where do I fit in, or what does that mean for you?
Yeah, the players definitely talk about it. They talk, the rumour mills, obviously. Rumours in rugby league are everywhere. So.
Yeah.
The players talk about, I heard we've done this, I heard we've done that, and you're never really sure until you speak with the coaching staff. I remember Smithy did tell me. He said, we had Chris Bailey in 2008, and Bales, I think, left to go to Manly. So Smithy was honest with him. He said, look, we need to bring another person in. There's obviously myself and Jared, and we needed someone else. So he said, we're getting Ben Rogers. And I said, yeah, that's great. And he just said, look, you're going to have to compete for your spot again like you did last year. And I was happy with that. I was fine. I knew where I stood, which was okay. And, you know, I thought I'd done enough through the preseason end of 08 into 09 to be in the starting team. And as it was, that they gave Benny the chance round one, which I was obviously disappointed with.
Yeah.
I got my chance in round two and was lucky enough to take it. So, yeah, it was that part there. New players coming in and trying to understand your spot in the team. It's difficult for players. It's, you know, sometimes players think they're better than what they are maybe, and you try and you think you're the man who's going to take that role, and when the club signs someone else, it can have a pretty big effect on you, which it did later in my career, sort of back end of, or halfway through 2010.
So you cop a few injuries, your form starts to suffer. So this is the back end of 09. We're moving into 2010. What was your headspace? What was wrong with the body? Talk me through that period.
I'd had a lot of niggles, so I'd tore my groin a couple of times. I tore my quad. I played with a torn quad against Manly in a game in 09 and really played poorly. Like, I shouldn't have been playing, like, to be frank. I should have pulled out and not played, but we were a bit sort of skinny for troops and said I'd play. You know, I strapped and strapped it up, said I'd have a go, and to be fair, I was horrible. So that was probably a took a big step back in my career. Didn't really understand at the time how big of a effect I had on the team playing injured and playing really poorly. And we got hammered. And that was, I think, a lot of people, media, some other players, potentially definitely coaching staff, I think, thought, well, maybe he's not the one that's going to take us forward, which definitely hurt. There was some, obviously, a fair bit of stuff in the press that was saying that I wasn't good enough, and then if I played injured, I've really let the team and the club down. And the
would you read a lot of that, the media stuff?
Not a great deal, but you have a lot of, you know, people come, oh, yeah, you're going all right, you're copping a fair bit of flack in the media. And
So
whether you read it or not, you're aware of it, absolutely. You're aware of it, and then obviously you're getting it from the club, and, you know, a few senior players are trying to, you know, why did you play, shouldn't have played, and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, right or wrong, I thought it was the right decision to play because we didn't have many other blokes. I think there's a couple other injuries, and as it was a really poor decision from myself and probably the medical staff at the time to allow me to play. I think I only got through 60 minutes and had to come off, and I missed the next, you know, 4 or 5 weeks with a torn quad. So in hindsight, I would have loved to have maybe had that week off and come back and played the next week, but, you know, hindsight's a beautiful thing.
It is indeed.
You don't always make the right decisions, and that was a good learning curve for me in my career. Didn't make that decision again to play. I played injured again in my career, but not that badly affected
that
by
level.
Injury.
Yeah. So then they've already got Ben Rogers at the club. They start to make more signings. Bo Henry comes in from the Dragons, I think he was playing with at the time. So from your point of view, could you see that the writing was on the wall as far as your time in Newcastle was concerned, or were they conversations that the coach had with you again?
Yeah, absolutely. When they signed, so halfway through 2010, there was, I think, 2008, Bowie Henry was the, you know, one of the players of the comp in the under-20s and, you know, prodigious talent. So there was obviously rumblings that he was going to come in. And that was, you know, again, similar situation to when Benny Rogers came in. I was understanding okay with that. I remember sitting down and having a chat with Rick Stone about it. He'd said that they still wanted me to stay at the club. Regardless, with Bo coming in, but I made the decision after some, you know, pretty had a long think about it and different things like that, that I didn't want to be in the position where I wasn't thought of as the number one halfback anymore. I was, you know, 3 to 4 years into my NRL career, and I wanted to have some guarantees, I suppose, that I was the one to take the club forward and be the starting halfback. And the Knights couldn't, you know, give me those assurances. I think they obviously, with Mullo playing the way he was, they were going to play him at 7 and Bo at 6. So they sort of said they wanted me to stay, but my contract was going to be, offer was less than what I was already on.
Right.
Which sort of was a bit of a hit to the ego as well as my standing as to where I thought I sat. And they obviously thought I sat a fair bit down on where I was. I decided halfway through 2010 to leave the club.
And then you went overseas. So that in itself is, you know, quite the journey. Spent a lot of time with the Catalans Dragons. How did the opportunity to go to France first pop up? Did they approach you, or did the management, you know, look at England and then say to you, look, you know, we've got this deal here? Or, you know, I think we hear about contracts a lot in rugby league, but the actual process, nobody gets into the nitty-gritty. So can you walk us through that that process. So
what happened was I was close with Trent Robinson, was our reserve grade coach, obviously, at the Knights, and then assistant for a few years. He'd moved on to the Roosters, 2010. And so Trent had got the head coaching job for the Catalans for 2011. So he rang me about a week after he got announced as the Catalans head coach and said that he wanted me to go with him. So I didn't go through my manager or anything at all. Trent rang me direct and said, going to Catalans, got a two-year head coaching job at the Catalans. I want you to come and be our halfback. You know, you're going to be starting every week. We don't have anyone else. It'll be your team, your halfback. You run the show, etc. Went to Sydney and met with him, so went and had lunch and sat down, took my manager as well, and went through what the deal would potentially look like.
All the snails you can eat.
Yeah, exactly. Frog's legs everywhere. went through what the club looked like as a whole, who else was going to go and help the club, because they'd come last in the Super League 2010, or were coming last at the time. He sort of basically mapped out a plan for the club, plan for myself, and how he thought it could help my career to potentially come back to the NRL, or if not, stay in the Super League and have a good career. So, ended up, didn't take really that long. It was a tough decision, really tough decision, but the nitty-gritty of the deal and how much it was worth and all that type of stuff went, that was easy done. It was done pretty quickly through my manager and Trent. And then it was more, did I want to leave the NRL? Mm. I was only 24, I think, at the time. Did I want to leave the NRL and go to the Super League as a 24-year-old, or did I want to have another crack at a different NRL club? And there was a few that were sort of having a sniff around at the time. But at the end of the day, I made the decision that I wanted to be the starting halfback and play week in, week out. I thought that was best for me at that time in my career, and the Catalans were the only club that were guaranteeing that at the time. So took that opportunity.
Tell me about Trent Robinson. It sounds like you've got quite a remarkable relationship and a bond with him. He's obviously a coach that's had a lot of success and highly revered in the NRL, but I suppose we haven't really seen a whole lot of, you know, the man behind the coaching box. Can you have a joke with him? What sort of personality is he?
Yeah, he's a bit of a joker, actually. He's quite a good personality.
I don't think you'd pick that if you didn't know him.
A lot of guys even think guys that play under him now still think he's a pretty serious, pretty intimidating sort of head coach figure, where I obviously knew him for quite a while through the Knights juniors or through the Knights reserve grade system into first grade, being first grade assistant coach as well. So had a really good relationship, still do to this day. Speak to him quite often just about rugby league and different things as well. And he's a good guy, Robbo. Sometimes he puts his angry head on in the press and gets a bit of a bad rap sometimes about maybe having a pretty strong opinion sometimes on different things. But he's a really good guy, an easy, down-to-earth guy. And, he's a family man. He's got a young family. And, he's certainly had probably the biggest influence on my career, I think, out of anyone. If I had to say anyone on my playing career, I think Trent definitely had the biggest influence on me. And as a person too, he taught me a lot about, taught me some life skills that I won't forget either.
You named in the Dream Team, played in the Exiles side, so success was coming at Catalans. That experience for you, I mean, having ownership of the team and playing, you know, weekly as the guy, did that then, that confidence just snowballed into all those individual accolades that followed?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the confidence from the head coach and from the club gave me that extra confidence, and I went there knowing my place and what after going through the plan that Trent had for the club, and I knew exactly what I needed to do to help the club and myself. And I think that gave me that added confidence to go and have my best couple of years in footy, as I did when I was there from 2011 and 12. Absolutely were my best 2 years. 2012, as I played, I didn't miss a game in 2012. Played 30-something games, including, Challenge Cup.
Wow.
And we finished third in the comp and played a couple of games for the Exiles against England and beat England in a test for the Exiles, which was an unbelievable experience. And, it was, I think that confidence from the people around me really gave me that, what I needed to go forward and to reap the benefits of all the hard work through my junior years.
Who were some of the, or maybe just one of the standouts of the players that you got to play alongside?
I think is Steve Menzies is, I think he's, from my time at the Catalans, the best player that I got to play with there. I think Danny Buderis was the best player I played with in the NRL, and Steve Menzies is definitely in the Super League, their top two. He's a great fella. We got along really well, played a lot of golf together, and our partners became really close friends overseas when we were in France. He was there for 3 years while I was over there. So, you know, really, really good fella, and as a player, just he's a special player. He could do things that other people couldn't. He'd see an opportunity somewhere that other people couldn't see, and learn a lot from him again as well about playing and training and what it takes to really, again, go to that next level.
So you spent 4 years?
Five years? Yeah.
So the body starts breaking down towards the back end. Could you see that or feel that the career was coming to an end? Or I'd imagine retiring would be a hard thing, and players often talk about, you know when it's the right time, but was that something that you felt within yourself, that the career was winding down? Because you're still young.
Yeah. So I had a pretty, after 2011 and 12 overseas, 2013 and 14 were just, I don't know if I was cursed or something, but sort of every time something happened, I, you know, ruptured bicep and torn muscles here, there and everywhere. And maybe it was pushing too hard, maybe, to try and get that next level, maybe. I'm not sure. But yeah, I ruptured my bicep round one of 2014, which was a massive blow. End up coming back to the Roosters on loan. Trent Robinson brought me back to the Roosters. I spent 6 months on loan at the Roosters as a backup to Pearson Maloney in their halves through the back end of 2014, which was a great experience. Got to learn a lot, train, and you know, got to experience some really high-level coaching and high-level training at the time. They were minor premiers in 2014, the Roosters. End up going back to France for 2015 and played just about every game. 2015, played, you know, 30-odd games again. And towards the back end of 2015, had really bad Achilles tendonitis, struggled to train day-to-day, sore shoulders, sore back. It was the body. My body probably wasn't built for rugby league. You know, right. I was a small guy. I struggled to get over sort of 81, 82 kilos. It's most players in the game now are more towards that 90 kilos rather than the 80. So
yep.
90 and above. So, I think the toll of, you know, having to train really, really hard when I was younger to try and get bigger and stronger and faster. And I think it took its toll on me towards the back end of my career in that 2015 year, as much as it was, you know, we made the top eight and pretty successful year again playing. I sort of knew halfway through that year that I didn't really think I could probably get through another preseason.
So you make the decision that you're going to retire, come back to Australia. The move into coaching, we touched on it at the start of the conversation. How did that then manifest into the role that you have now? Did you have a plan mapped out for life after football and how it would all come to be, or were you just sort of winging it?
Yeah, I winged it a bit. I didn't really have a plan. When 2015, my wife was pregnant overseas, so we decided, you know, I decided I was going to retire and that we were going to come back. When we came back, and up spoke to, I think Danny Buderis was on the coaching staff here at the Knights, and obviously I've spoken about my relationship with him, and spoke to Trent and another couple of people about coming back to do some. I wanted to stay involved in rugby league. I didn't want to be lost to it. And I spoke to Trent, and then speaking with, he said, why don't I just ring Nathan Brown? Brownie had been got the head coach, and you know, why don't you just ring him and see if there's any opportunities there for you? You're going to live in Newcastle. It's where your family is. Why don't you just ring him? So I did. I rang Brownie, spoke to him, and Brownie had tried to sign me a couple of times at Huddersfield when he was coaching at Huddersfield and St Helens overseas.
How the tables are turned.
Yeah,
hey?
So I rang him, and he sort of...
Sorry for knocking you back all those times.
Yeah, it was a bit like that, actually. It was quite a funny conversation with Brownie. He sort of said, you know, similar thing to that. He said, you know, how funny it is that you said no to me before. Why am I going to give you a shot now? But jokingly, but no, he was really good, Brownie, and he did a bit of research and spoke to a few other people that knew me pretty well, and said, you know, we want you to be involved with the club. They weren't sure at first in what capacity. Brownie said, I want you to come in and mentor a few of our young halves, do a bit of kicking to start with. He said, you know, we don't have much money at the moment. You know, there's only sort of a part-time role, help with our under-20s and juniors and stuff like that. And I said, yep, absolutely, love to be involved. So 2016, got involved with the club and just sort of jumped in and out and helped out as much as I could. And, yeah, sort of went from there.
So foot in the door, then transfers into a full-time role that you're in now. Beyond the pathways, do you think that first grade coaching is something that you'd like to do down the road? Have you thought that far ahead?
Yeah, I'd love to have a crack at it. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing now, working with the younger players, and this year got to be the head coach for the first time, so head coach the under-18s team this year, which was, I loved every minute of it. Really, really enjoyed coaching and you know, what goes with it. And I learn a lot about myself and a lot about the game and the players and the players of today and how different the game is. And the changes that have been made over the last probably 10 years and from when I was a junior at the club to the juniors that we've got now. So, yeah, look, I'd love to keep progressing as a coach and work my way, you know, like I did as a player, my way through the grades, whether it's at this club or eventually down the track, if you have to leave to get the opportunity. Who knows? Not quite sure what's going to happen, down the track, but I'd love to one day, be an NRL coach if I can.
Before we finish up, some of the best memories, and it might not even be on the field, probably thinking off the field and practical jokes and is there any moments like that stand out that you could share? Because I'm sure that you've had some, you know, prankster teammates over the years, whether it's here or abroad.
Yeah, that's for sure. I don't know if there's any that could probably go to air. Some of the stuff that I've witnessed and, been lucky enough maybe or unlucky enough to see. But I had some great times. Living overseas in France, we lived on the Mediterranean. Unbelievable place. Food, culture, lifestyle-wise, it was just... You know, it's on another level. They do it right, the French. They're relaxed and laid back. And you want something done in a day, it gets done in a week. You want something done in a week, it takes 2 months. You know, they got life sorted. You know, it was frustrating at first, but once you wrap your head around that and
just embrace it.
Yeah, you have to. You just embrace the French mentality. And down south where we were at the Catalans, it's so laid back and so cool. And, speak a lot of French. I went really hard at trying to learn how to speak French when I went over there. It was one thing that Trent really wanted me to do, and so I wouldn't say I'm fluent, but I'm pretty good in French now. I've been away from it for a couple of years, but
with the calls on the field,
yeah, we spoke in French on the field, so all our calls were French on field, which was pretty cool. And just living day to day, having to go to the bank and stuff was a challenge where we were. Like, there wasn't a lot of English speakers down where we were, so I really enjoyed speaking French and. You know, it's something that I miss. You know, I occasionally speak to a few of the guys over there and, you know, try and I really want to keep a hold of it because it's, you know, you have so many good experiences and, you know, I could probably bang on forever about different funny stuff that happened throughout my career. But those life experiences of being overseas and traveling and, you know, I recommend to all the guys playing in the NRL, if you get the opportunity to go and play in Europe, go and do it because it's an amazing part of the world. And, you know, when you get time off, you're an hour of flight from Italy or Spain or wherever you want to go. We had some really, really cool trips with the team and players and some nights out in Barcelona that probably should stay off air. But, you know, it was as a lifestyle choice, it was so much fun.
What about roommates? So speaking to Kirk Yidley about some of the roommates that he had over his career and some of the quirks that some of those roommates had. Who was your normal roomie during your nights period?
Nights career was Jared Mullen, roommate. One of the worst snorers you've ever heard.
Right.
Absolutely horrendous snoring. So he got whacked with a pillow just about every time we roomed together. He didn't like wearing clothes much. Was probably his quirk. He liked to look at himself in the mirror and get around with not much on. But then when I went overseas, room with Steve Menzies, most of the time there, and he's absolute champion. I always say Beaver's he's like an 18-year-old kid stuck in a 35 or 40-year-old man's body. You know, he played PlayStation and he'd nip out of the room at 10 o'clock the night before the game and go to the servo and come back with lollies and chocolate. And I was like, what are you doing? You know, I was hungry.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, he was awesome fun, the room. We had a heap of fun and we got along really well and played a lot of golf and stuff together as well. And, you know, as far as roommates go, I think he was probably the best that I had.
Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to relive some of the glory moments of the career, and to finish off, seeing as you want to dust up on your French, maybe you can give us a little farewell in French. How you think the skills are going? You've got a little sentence for me you can bust out. Say.
Merci à tous pour aujourd'hui. Je suis très content d'être ici ce soir. Bonne journée. Au revoir.
Well said. Couldn't have said it better myself. Scotty Giroux, thank you so much.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.